Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome tonight to tonight's edition of Jump Right In, a production of 1111 Broadcasting. This is Splash, and my pond is open. Last night, I ran out of time while we were talking about Liz Warren, the people's warrior, and the chink in her people's advocate armor that I was beginning to see. I ran out of time and didn't do it justice, so we'll revisit that tonight because I do love this woman. We also talked about the new Elmo Senate and all of the whining going on the Smurf side of the aisle. Tonight we'll talk about the potential pitfalls of the new Elmo approach of allowing debate on the Senate floor and the votes on minority amendments. We also talked about Queen Pelosi's struggle to remain relevant even within her own party. And tonight, she has some 2016 predictions you'll just have to hear. We'll also talk about the drone that landed on the White House lawn. After all, it is sort of the title of tonight's show. But can you imagine? Man. And I want to give you my take on the Smurfs' criticism of the Elmos' criticisms of Obama's pandering to the new Saudi king. We have a great show for you tonight, so much to cover. I doubt we'll be able to cover it all again tonight, but I just don't know, so we'll have to see. The number to call, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730, and I encourage you to jump right in. Wade carefully if you must. And remember, in my pond, everyone swims at their own risk. We'll be here for the next hour doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics. And tonight, our focus is going to be on everything, because I'm going to bounce around and jump from this to that. So tell me what you think. I do want to know. Now, we do now have a blog, so our shows are posted there, past, present, and future. Go to 1111broadcasting.com, and you can listen to a show, make a comment or suggestion, or just say hi. You can also follow me on Facebook at 1111broadcasting. The Facebook page is new to me, so I don't know all the ins and outs of social media. People are teaching me even as we speak. But I do know that you can listen to the show right there on the Facebook page. You just click the little play arrow on the picture of the belly flopper. You'll recognize him when you see it. That's the show page is 1111 Broadcasting. That's the Facebook show page for the show. Now, if you miss a show, don't sweat it. Shows are listed on the blog and on the Facebook page. Just go to 1111 Broadcasting, scroll up, scroll down. You'll find the show you're looking for. You can jump right into the show chat room here live. You'll need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. Put in your email address, pick a screen name and a password, and voila, you can jump right into the chat room. Pick on people or even pick on me. I can take it. Of course, you don't need to create an account to call. So just go ahead and call, and you'll be logged into, you'll be right there on the show. So the number to call, 215-383-5730, that's 215-383-5730. Before we get back into Liz Warren, Warrior Princess, let me tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my family to Choice Mattress and everything was considered, from the weight of each family member to their age to the way that each of us sleeps. The right mattress was personally selected for each of us. Now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty. Not the prorated limited warranties like other stores. Chances are, if you bought a bed in the Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years, then you bought it from David. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds, and you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your household. Go stop in at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road, 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, Dave is always happy to answer them. Give him a call, 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice you can make in your sleep. Before we move into the main part of the show, let's finish what I started with Liz Warren last night. First of all, she totally dissed Wall Street bankers and her own party's president by successfully sabotaging Obama's Andy Weiss nomination to the Treasury Department. And then she turned her sights on big pharmacy. And this is where I saw the chink in her armor as the champion for the middle class. And this is where I'm going to pick up. Because, of course, you know, Elizabeth Warren, as I said last night, but I was in a rush, she turned her populist ire. This was all from a story on Politico, where I spent a lot of my time. She usually reserves it for Wall Street, but she turned it on drug companies that are making billions of dollars in profits. Folks, they've always made billions of profits. We know that, right? Okay. Just checking. I didn't know if we knew that or not. They do make billions of dollars in profits, and that was her focus tonight. So, needless to say, hang on 1 second here, folks. I'm checking on something here. There we go. Yeah. Okay. And so, as we're turning our to this story on Liz Warren, she's addressing the leading healthcare reform advocacy group, the Massachusetts Democrat lambasted pharmaceutical firms that were making money by skirting the law, even while relying on taxpayer-supported research to develop blockbuster medications. I love this woman. She is everything every other Smurf pretends to be. I just wish she would go all out. Why not point out how, right after Obama took office in 2009, he met with Big Pharma, actually crawled into bed with them, along with big insurance lobbyists and big health provider lobbyists, to get their input on how the new healthcare law could bring them more customers and get them even more money. If she would just jump on board that both sides are interested in only themselves and the special interests they serve, rather than the middle class who actually voted them into office, then she could be instrumental in a national effort to send all the bums home. But every now and then, you hear her tout the Smurfs, including Obama, as though they are the champions of the middle class, while thumping the Elmos as being the middle class worst nightmare. And it makes me wonder, is she really just part of the ruse? Has her corruption begun? Like the Hubble telescope seeing the very birth of a new star, are we witnessing how a good person, with our best interest at heart, begins to turn to the dark side, willing to sacrifice core fundamentals in order to advance further at least some of their message, their agenda, however good it may be, her career even? I hope not. I have followed Liz Warren for many years, since long before she entered the political arena, and when she threw her hat in for senator, I thought, now here's one who could actually do it, who could take a pure message of what is best for the middle class, the human community, and the country as a whole, and advance it in a way that doesn't surrender to the game of Washington politics, the cronyism, the corruption. But here she is, sticking it to Big Pharma, so my jury is still out on her. She says, it seems that the biggest drug companies are increasingly playing by a different set of rules than everybody else. It's a 20-minute speech during the Families USA annual Health Action Conference in Washington, D.C. Warren is, of course, the latest in a string of Democrat heavyweights to speak at the annual meeting of Family USA, one of the strongest supporters. This group was one of the strongest supporters of the Affordable Care Act. Many on the left have been pushing Warren to run for president as a more liberal counterpart to the likely 2016 Hillary Clinton candidacy. So we see this is an annual event for Smurfs, by Smurfs, for Smurfs, and so it's always headlined with a bunch of Smurfs. And, you know, folks, it's just telling me I don't have any audio, and I'm just not really sure that I do. But I guess we'll have to listen to the archive the archive show and see. I'm starting to believe now. So we see that this is an annual event for Smurfs, and the group was one of the strongest supporters of Obamacare, and Obamacare was one of the strongest supporters of Big Pharma. So a little bit of hypocrisy here, I think so. Suddenly, I am not so impressed. Hillary Clinton has spoke here, and as she is the crony capitalist, if there ever was one, a darling of Wall Street, and Liz has at times even taken Hillary to task for that. I'm starting to believe more and more that Hillary may try to get Liz to be her vice president on her ticket. Maybe that's what their meetings were all about recently. Understand that if Hillary chooses Liz, it will only be to use her so that Hillary can cover her stealth connections to Wall Street with a veil of populism. Once in office, if she wins, Hillary would have nothing but contention between her and Liz, unless she could fully turn Liz to the dark side, and with some visible chinks beginning to appear in Liz's armor, that is not out of the realm of possibilities. So very sad. But I don't think that will happen. And this was hopefully just an appearance for Liz. So I don't think that she'll be the VEEP slot. She's not going to fill the VEEP slot, and I don't think it's going to be offered. But then again, sometimes I just don't think. At least that's what some people say. Anyway, at this convention in the past, Clinton, Obama has attended it twice, been the speaker, the keynote speaker, first as a senator in 2007, and then in 2011, after Obamacare was signed into law. Vice President Joe Biden has spoken at this function, as well as in the past, President Bill Clinton and the late Senator Ted Kennedy. All have spoken at the Families USA Health Action Conference. Warren, who has financial reform was her signature issue, lauded the Affordable Care Act for reducing the country's uninsured and providing millions of people access to health care. The improvements over the last few years have been, she says, pretty amazing. But access is only half of the picture, she continued, calling for legislation that would require the law-breaking drug companies to put even more money into funding research. In any case, now see, there she goes. I love her for taking aim at the law-breaking drug companies, but it was the unaffordable We Don't Really Give a Shit Act that made their actions possible. Otherwise, she wouldn't have to call for additional legislation to stop it. The actions she is calling unlawful are actually legal. And add to that her misrepresentation over affordable and accessible, and you have a real serious issue brewing here. I mean, the people, they don't see ACA as affordable. That, I mean, the majority of people that have an experience with ACA, it's not affordable. When we've talked about, and we haven't talked about this in a while, so let's talk about it. First of all, in a pool of 45,000 uninsured, the administration started out with 7 million, give or take, enrollees last year. Now, we can argue that many of those were actually uninsured, but here's the bottom line. Before the recession, the uninsured population was 14.4%. That was in the Bush economy, 14.4%. The recession bumped that to 16.3%, where it has fluctuated throughout this sluggish recovery, right around that mark. And at the end of last year, right before the individual mandate kicked in, if you'll remember, somewhere around 5 million cancellation letters went out. Insurance companies canceling policies that no longer fit the guidelines under the grandfather clause written by the Obama administration. Now, again, we can debate how many cancellations there were, even though it was definitely millions. We can debate whether or not those cancellations were Obama's fault, even though he offered his half-hearted apology and his fix for that problem. What is not debatable is that the uninsured population spiked during those two quarters up to 18%, from 16.3% up to 18%, and there was no other reason for it. Now, the uninsured population now stands at 12.9%. That means that from its height of 18%, it has dropped not quite 16 million people. From the recession bump to 16.3%, that's what the uninsured population rose to after the recession. From the recession bump, that means it's dropped about 10.5 million people from that point. And from the pre-recession level of 14.4%, which is what we should have long since returned to with the uninsured population, has only dropped by about 4.5 million people. Now, some of those are people who were waiting to go on Medicare. About 8,000 people turn 65 every day. That's 3.6 million people right there since the individual mandate went into effect and since the initial enrollment period. Now, don't forget, some of those people, of course, were insured before they just converted to Medicare. So you can't say they were all of those were part of the uninsured population dropping down. But all of those, and don't forget, all of those people that have gotten jobs, that they get insurance now through their job, those jobs were offering insurance anyway, those are actually people returning to the workforce from the recession that would have gotten jobs anyway and would have gotten insurance anyway. So, all of that, when you consider all of that, you start to see my point here. We really haven't raised the uninsured population or lowered the uninsured population to a significant degree other than what it would have been anyway. So there really isn't much to laud about the Unaffordable We Don't Give a Shit Act. At best, we insured an additional 3.5 million people that weren't already insured before the recession at the price of about $45,000 per person. What a bargain. Now, we could have given each of these people $10,000 directly and told them, go forth and buy insurance. And they would have gotten a plan three times as good as the Silver Plan offered on healthcare.gov and shaved about $100 billion a year off of the cost of this monstrosity alone. Accessible? Try to find a doctor if you're on Medicaid expansion plan. You're lucky if you can find one within 45 miles of you. Most of these people don't even have cars. So what are they to do? The same thing they've always done. They go right to the emergency room for a sniffle or the flu. Wasn't that part of what the Unaffordable We Don't Give a Shit Act was supposed to put a stop to? Okay, now I'm incensed because I'm all riled up by this. So what are we talking about here? Oh, yeah, Liz Warren. I love the woman, but I'm starting to see the chinks in her populist armor. She goes on to say drug companies make great contributions, but so do taxpayers. In other words, we built those medical innovations together, Warren said to a round of applause from hundreds of advocates and outreach workers in attendance. She plans to introduce a bill next week and criticize the companies that have withheld safety information about their drugs and given doctors kickbacks for writing prescriptions. Between 2007 and 2012, she said, the largest pharmaceutical companies have paid more than $13 billion in fines and settlements from violating federal laws. So in other words, they're being snagged and punished for when they break the law. So what's the rub, bub? It sounds like we're catching them if they break the law, and we're punishing them for breaking that law. Liz says we should make it easier for the biggest drug companies to help develop the next generation of cures and harder for them to profit from breaking the law and defrauding taxpayers. Well, isn't that happening right now? Thanks for the drugs. Here's your fine. We celebrate the accomplishments, she says, of our pharmaceutical industry because these blockbuster drugs let people live longer, healthier lives. But we are also mindful that these companies did not do it alone. Man, doesn't that sound familiar? Don't let these businesses and corporations tell you that they, you know, create those jobs. So that's Liz Warren. Love her to death, but if she doesn't get her act together, she's slowly but surely going to become just like all the rest of them that turn to the dark side. Oh, man. But I do love the woman. I think that she is, as I said, everything that every other Smurf pretends that they want to be. So anyway, the we do want to turn now to back to the Senate, where the Elmos are now in control, and moving through their commitments to bring debate to the Senate floor and to allow votes on amendments for the minority party. These are things that primarily didn't happen under the previous regime of Prince Harry. The 2016 electoral map, however, this does complicate things for the new Senate. And this is from an article on Politico. It didn't take long for the vulnerable Republican senators to start bucking their new majority party line. Just 3 weeks into Mitch McConnell's reign as Senate Majority Leader, he's already confronting the challenges of running a caucus filled with blue state Republicans who face re-election next year in 2016. They've begun departing from the GOP stance on issues like energy and climate, a move that lets them espouse independence back home, but also exposes divisions that are bound to intensify as 2016 draws near. Energy and climate, that's it. Big deal. I thought they were going to say that they were parting ways on things like Obamacare and minimum wage. Those would be huge deals. So this is not all that big a deal. I think they're trying to make a mountain out of a molehill here. But anyway, the Senate's dynamic was on display in a series of amendment votes over the last week on the Keystone XL pipeline. We've reported on this and talked about it extensively. The New Hampshire Senator Kelly Ayotte, one of the Democrats' top targets in 2016, repeatedly broke with her party, including by opposing efforts to hamper Obama's international climate negotiations. Illinois Senator Mark Kirk was the lone Republican to back regulations on petroleum coke, a byproduct from oil refining. And conservative Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey was one of 15 Republicans to endorse a statement that humans contribute to climate change. Again, folks, the Smurfs are really trying to make a big deal out of this fissure, but what they are actually doing is now helping vulnerable Elmos in 2016. I mean, for example, is it not going to help Pat Toomey in the blue state of Pennsylvania? Is it not going to help him to be able to go back and say, look, you know, I do believe that the climate change, and I do believe that humans are contributing. The factor, I don't know how much that is, but the bottom line is we need jobs, and so I support the XL pipeline overall, even if I do believe that we are contributing to global warming. In addition to that, he can also point right to the State Department's report that the XL pipeline is going to contribute to climate change at no significant level. So the Smurfs are trying to make a big deal out of this. The XL will pass, and these blue state Elmos will now be able to define a difference between them and their party in a blue state. All politics being local, this is not just smart this is not so smart on the part of the Smurfs, and quite smart on the part of the Elmos. The ultimate goal here is for the new Elmo Senate. It's twofold: A, allow debate and votes on amendments from the minority, while B, sending bills to the president's desk for veto. Both goals will be met on the XL pipeline. Do you remember in 2010 the lack of trust between House Smurfs and Senate Smurfs when they were rushing to pass the ACA, Obamacare, in the 11th hour before Queen Pelosi had to surrender her gavel at the people's request that next January? The Senate had to pass the House bill and then trust the House to pass the reconciliation bill so that the unaffordable We Don't Give a Shit Act could become the monster that it has become. That's politics, folks. It is easy for one side or the other to participate in obstruction. Not so easy to get everyone in your own party to go all along with every single little thing. That's not the important factor there. The Smurf media is trying to make a mountain out of a molehill here. Will there be times that the Elmo Congress won't get a bill passed? Of course. Just like there were Smurf bills that didn't make it into the president's desk when they held all the marbles. Anyway, They want to try to make something out of it, so let's see what else they've got. Another defector, North Carolina Senator Richard Burr, was the only Republican to vote for a Democrat-backed mandate that the pipeline be built with U.S. steel. It's real simple, he said. I've been for Buy America every time it's come up to the Senate. Translation. Thank you, Smurfs, for allowing me to be able to say I support Buy America yet again to my supporters back home, while at the same time I'm going to vote for the Keystone Pipeline when the total bill comes to a final vote. I mean, this is, to me, is an unintended benefit of the Alamo approach to allow debate on the Senate floor and to allow minority amendments to come up for a vote. Democrats lost most of the amendment battles, the article goes on to say, and the Senate is expected to eventually pass the pro-Keystone bill with support of all of its chamber's 54 Republicans. You see? Mission accomplished. That's exactly what I was saying. They allowed the amendments to come to a vote. Of course, they got defeated. That doesn't never guarantee that it's going to pass. And they're going to ultimately send this bill to the president's desk. The pipeline also has Democratic supporters, such as Colorado Senator Michael Bennett, himself vulnerable in 2016, who opposed a Democrat-led filibuster that stalled the measure Monday night. What? You mean there's dissension in the ranks of the Smurfs as well? No, there can't be. But the early test on the Keystone shows one of the major juggling acts McConnell must handle as he begins to chart an aggressive course for his majority, with more tough votes looming on the budget, taxes, trade, and foreign policy. Does anyone think that McConnell thought this would be easy? A slam dunk? A walk in the park? They even brought it up at their own retreat, how much more difficult it is to negotiate the waters of the Senate when things can just fly right through the House. The bottom line is that in the end, the Elmos will pass bills. They will send them to the president's desk, and they will show the electorate that the only obstacle to the people's business has been sitting in the Oval Office all along. At least that's what they had better do if they want to win in 2016. The article goes on. If McConnell goes too far to the right, this is their defense of this, or their support of this theory. If McConnell goes too far to the right, he could lose swing state GOP senators who need to moderate on issues that resonate in their backyards, especially during a presidential election year that's expected to bring a surge of Democratic turnout. But if McConnell tries to move this to the center on an issue that plays well for Ohio or Wisconsin, where GOP Senator Rob Portman and Ron Johnson face re-election respectively, he could have a hard time reconciling the Senate's legislation with that whatever comes out of the conservative House. Listen to that verbiage, folks. He could lose. He could have a hard time. They really want this to be a problem, the Smurf media. They really want the Elmos to be their own worst enemy. The debates and amendments are going to offer cover for a lot of Elmos in blue states come 2016. This is going to help the Elmos keep both the House and the Senate, especially if they can win the White House. And remember, these things come in cycles, so it's time for a gear change from the top. Remember we talked about that secret cigar parlor under the Potomac where they get their marching orders, this single super party. The benefits are unavoidable. So the Politico article mentions them finally way down the article. One bright spot, the defections will help GOP senators rebut Democratic accusations that they are mere foot soldiers for the party's leadership in an unpopular Congress. Republican leaders hope their endangered senators will defect on less controversial issues, but ultimately fall in line for the bulk of the party's agenda, starting with the Keystone and continuing into spring's budget fight. And that's exactly what will happen. Enough defense to bring back home and share with the local electorate, and enough offense to expose Obama as the true obstacle to the people's business. Not everyone is going to vote like a red state senator from Texas, admitted John Cornyn, the Republican from Texas. That's just part of our diversity and regional differences. But I'd say we're pretty darn unified, and we're making good progress. Indeed, the Senate's GOP conferences ideological spectrum includes a conservative wing marked by the likes of Ted Cruz of Texas and freshman James Lankford of Oklahoma, along with a handful of moderates like Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. In the middle is McConnell, who has 54 votes if he can keep his caucus united, six shy of breaking a Democrat filibuster and 13 short of overriding a veto. What makes this class of Republican senators particularly vulnerable, the article says, is the expectation that they'll be running in a far different climate in 2016. When they all won their election, you'll remember, in 2010, the political environment heavily favored Republicans in the rise of the Tea Party and fears over Obamacare. That drove a lot of GOP turnout in a midterm election. But with the presidential race driving a larger number of voters in 2016, Democrats hopeful that Hillary Clinton will draw women to the polls. Republicans could face a daunting path to holding the majority. The GOP has 24 Senate seats in contention, compared with the Democrats' 10. And all of that may be true, folks, but while the Smurfs are having their powwows about how they don't have a message, and how to retool their message so that people can be made to see that it was they, the Smurfs, and their policies that the mean old Elmos would never let them do that led to all of this good economic news. While they are doing that, while they are retooling, the Elmos are allowing debate, they're allowing votes on minority amendments, and they are reaping all of the local defenses that their vulnerable members will need while staying ever focused on the goal of sending bill after bill after bill to the president's desk, whether he vetoes them or not, whether his vetoes are sustained or not. This is a big mistake that Prince Harry made in the lead up to the midterm tsunami of 2014. He thought he was shielding his vulnerable fellow Smurfs from incriminating votes, but instead he was denying them the opportunity to set themselves apart from Obama. By not allowing these votes of distinction, it left voters back home to assume that their vulnerable Smurfs supported all of Obama's policies, all of which were on the ballot. Obama made that very clear. So maybe the Elmos have learned from this mistake that the Smurfs made and decided that they have 2 years to do the opposite while making themselves look good by allowing debate and votes on minority amendments. They can be taught. But the left is right about one thing. Hillary will bring out the women. But a lot of those women who come out because of Hillary will come out to vote against Hillary. Women are not stupid. They don't want just any woman president. They want the right woman president. And Hillary ain't it. She is not what she pretends to be. The people balked when she cried poor mouth as she was like she was one of us. You'll remember that. We were poor. We actually were in debt when we came out of the White House. Okay? Nobody believes that. She lacked such credibility when she said, don't let those businesses tell you, businesses and corporations tell you, you know, that they created those jobs. She didn't even sound like she believed herself. And then there's this whole, have you hugged your terrorist today? Empathy with our enemies things. Expect that to be played and played and played over and over and over if she becomes the nominee for the Smurfs. No, Hillary is not the right woman president. Elizabeth Warren is the right woman president. She's the right woman for the job. And by right, of course, I mean left. She is everything that every other Smurf pretends to be, including Hillary. And if Liz would only run, women would rally to her. As William Wallace said in one of my favorite movies, Braveheart, if you would only lead them, the people would follow you, and so would I. No, Hillary is not the right woman for the job, unless, of course, you're Nancy Pelosi. She seems to think that Hillary is the right person for the job. And she came out with some opinions as she was speaking in an interview So not only does Queen Pelosi think Hillary is the right woman for the job, but she also wishes Mitt Romney would be her ultimate opponent, saying that she likes Hillary Clinton's odds if she runs against Mitt Romney in 2016. She said, "Let me put it this way. I hope he's their nominee," Pelosi told The Hill in an interview published on Tuesday. Does this mean that she thinks Hillary has less of a chance against all the others, or the likely other, Jeb Bush? Pelosi, who has been very vocal in her enthusiasm for a Clinton White House bid, said the 2012 Republican presidential nominee wouldn't beat the former Secretary of State if both ran for the White House again. So what's better than a person who lost a bid for the nomination, but a person who lost their bid for the presidency in the general election? And Mitt has actually done both. This would be the loser bowl, Hillary against Mitt Romney. Folks, if the Smurfs nominate Hillary, they deserve to lose. If the Elmos nominate Mitt again, they deserve to lose. If each of them is nominated to their respective parties, I just won't know how to call it. It would be the ultimate hunting match between Elmer Fudd and Wile E. Coyote. Lots of backfire and no prize. Why is Mitt running again anyway? Is he crazy? Nancy says, no, I mean, he might be a nice person. No offense, no offense. But let's save you time," she said. Clinton has been dominating the polls against her other Democrats for the party's nomination. That's because there is no one else. The only reason Liz Warren polls so poorly is because nobody thinks she's gonna run, and she's held a slight edge in a hypothetical matchup with political GOP intenders. A CBS poll released last week found that Clinton and Romney are the would-be candidates Americans most want to see in the race. A slight edge over the potential GOP contenders. A slight edge at a time where most see her as the actual nominee already. That should not be encouraging, but Nancy's encouraged, apparently encouraged a lot. Pelosi remains confident that Clinton will be the Democrats' nominee in 2016. If she runs, she will win the nomination, Pelosi said. And I'm telling you, she will lose the general. You Smurfs had better beg Liz Warren to run for president. She is your only hope in 2016. But who wants to be president anyway? Look at all the dangers in being president. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let me remind you, that when it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and his staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. My whole family is now sleeping in beds from Choice Mattress, and you cannot say enough about the benefits of a great night's sleep on the right mattress chosen just for you. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And check out all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located at 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, give David a call. It's 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice that you can make in your sleep. Now we do want to turn our sights to the incident that occurred back here last week with regards to the quadtropper that landed on the South Lawn of the White House. President Barack Obama repeated calls for commercial drone regulation. I don't ever remember him asking for them. But after what he called a Radio Shack quality unmanned aircraft landed on the White House grounds earlier this week. Radio Shack quality, folks. Is that akin to a JV terror group? I mean, who is he kidding with this kind of language? The drone landed on the White House, the drone that landed on the White House, you buy in Radio Shack, Obama said Tuesday in an interview with CNN's Fareed Zakaria. He that interview, by the way, took place in India while the president was over there. Obama said he had spoken with the FAA and other agencies about how we are managing this new technology. Before somebody tries to kill me, he just didn't stop. Before somebody tries to kill me with it, if you guys aren't letting them right in my front door, you're allowing potential air assaults. Hasn't there this been the problem from the beginning of this administration? Remember the Salais, Michelle and Tariq, who duped White House security so they could crash a White House dinner? Remember the phony sign language interpreter who stood merely an arm's length from the president at Nelson Mandela's memorial? At least with Bush, it was a shoe. Everybody wears shoes. Shoes are permitted through White House security every day. But these are people, and now drones. Radio Shack drones. If a Radio Shack drone can get in, you don't think a sophisticated drone can get in? Now, thank God none of them were armed and dangerous, especially that drone. What a horrible irony that would be to Obama, the president of drone attacks, if he was attacked, or worse, by a drone. Obama noted that there are incredibly useful functions for drones, such as the possible Amazon deliveries and farmers managing crops, but added, we don't really have any kind of regulatory structure for it at all. Translation, sweet, something new to regulate. But seriously, aren't they already regulating airspace around the White House? Already supposed to be watching out for our president? Didn't they just clean house at Secret Service over security breaches, which this certainly would be? The president's comments come a day after a recreational drone, of course, crashed on the White House grounds on Monday. White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest said Monday there is no ongoing threat to anybody at the White House following the incident. Was there a threat? I wonder. I mean, if the guy didn't mean it and just lost control of his toy, can you imagine the pit in his stomach when he watched it go over the White House fence and crash land in the president's yard on the South Lawn like it was Area 51? Wouldn't that make a great Southwest airline commercial? Want to get away? The drone crash is just the latest of several security breaches in and around the White House. In December, a report by an independent panel announced by Homeland Security Jay Johnson, that Secretary Jay Johnson, recommended changes to Secret Service and to the White House security, including a proposed higher fence around the property. And now Zakira asked the president whether he was confident that he understands how to prevent the possibility of a future drone from being armed. And the president responded, this is a broader problem. I'll leave it to the Secret Service to talk about this particular event, Obama replied. Yeah. Because they've been so good at accidentally protecting you so far. So I ask all you potential presidential candidates, Hillary, Mitt, Jeb, Marco, Elizabeth, are you sure you want this job? I don't know. Anyway, I clicked the wrong button. Oh, there we go. Get rid of that. All right. Obama, of course, was in India, and he stopped his trip short by one day so that he could cruise over to Saudi Arabia as their monarch had passed away at the age of 90. President Barack Obama is defending now the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia on Tuesday as he headed to Riyadh to pay respects to the Desert Kingdom's late monarch. Sometimes, Obama said, we have to balance our need to speak to them about human rights issues with the immediate concerns that we have in terms of countering terrorism or dealing with regional stability. Now, this was the same interview with Fareed. Doesn't it strike anyone as odd that the president would choose a journalist with a major plagiarism issues with which to conduct an interview? It just struck me as odd. So I thought I'd throw that out there. The president's interview, filmed in India on Tuesday, comes as Obama touches down in Saudi Arabia to honor the late King Abdullah and to meet with his successor, King Salman, before returning to Washington. Obama avoided directly answering questions on whether he would speak to the Saudi officials about human rights. Specifically, the case of a Saudi blogger, this really hits home with me, who has been sentenced to 1,000 lashes and 20 years in prison. I don't think he's going to have to worry about 20 years in prison, because 1,000 lashes, I can't imagine that not killing any man. Do we really think a memorial, though, would be the time or the place for Obama to bring up such issues? I mean, journalists can be. I'm no Obama fan. Everybody knows that. But that would not be the time or the place. The president noted, however, that some U.S. allies have been uncomfortable and frustrated with the pressure when they're pressured on human rights and reforms. So isn't a criminal uncomfortable when you start interrogating him about his crimes that he's trying to keep secret and keep anybody from finding out about? I mean, that's what we're talking about here with human rights, folks. And you know, some of them listen and some of them don't, Obama said, noting that former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak was initially dismissive of 2011 protests that led to his ouster. Oh, yeah. Like, the Saudis dismissing human rights lectures is going to lead to the fall of the Saudi royal family. I've seen weirder things happen, but I just don't believe that that's going to be one of them. The Deputy National Security Advisor, Ben Rhodes, said that the president's trip would provide the opportunity to touch base on some of the issues that the U.S. will work with Saudi Arabia on, including Iran nuclear negotiations, according to the Pool report. Rhodes said he expects the relationship with Salman will remain quite similar to how it was with Abdullah, noting that Abdullah and Obama could pick up the phone and they did not always agree, but they could be candid in their differences. Regarding issues such as equality and tolerance for women and religion, Rhodes said Abdullah took some initial steps in political participation, but much more work needs to be done. So the left, by the way, is whining about the criticism that they're receiving, that the president is receiving for pandering to the Saudis. They're crying foul since the right did the very same thing, pandering to the Saudis, which would make sense, that whining about that would make sense if the left hadn't criticized President Bush so much when he pandered to the Saudis. I mean, that was just a huge thing after 9/11, how he protected the Saudis and pandered to them, especially in his aim, when he took aim at Iraq. It's hard to find all these criticisms that the left made back in the Bush era, what with the internet inequality and all. But I, Splash, being the king of Google, have found plenty of them. But let me just give you the juiciest one, because the man happens to be our Secretary of State right now, and he happened to be running for the presidency against then first term George W. Bush. Mike Glover wrote an article in the AP, for the AP, called Kerry Assails Bush on the Saudi Relationship. This was from April 19th, 2004, and Kerry said, a Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry, I'm sorry, Mike Glover wrote, Democrat presidential candidate John Kerry on Monday vowed to end the sweetheart relationship that allows money to flow through Arab countries to terrorist groups, and criticized President Bush over a report that he had struck a deal with the Saudi officials to lower gasoline prices right before the election. So do you see, folks, how at their core, they are all the same. Smurfs, Elmos, all of them. Well, that's a wrap for tonight's show, folks. My pond will reopen. Remember, there's no show on tomorrow night because I've got something to do and I don't have the benefits of a fill-in guest host like the big boys do. So my pond will reopen on Thursday night at 8 p.m. Check the website to see what's up for Thursday night's show, 1111broadcasting.com. And you can also, of course, go to the Facebook page, 1111 Broadcasting. I hope you'll join us. And until Thursday night, do what you love and love what you do. Good night, everybody.